Thanks, Rob. It is a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, and what a special day here in Chicago. The Bears began their 2017-2018 campaign today in Bourbonnais. Their first practice, training camp. There's something special about Bears training camp. Images of Jim McMahon on a moped or Walter Payton signing autographs in Platteville cross the mind. Now it's time to get to know all of the offseason acquisitions, the rookies, and a coaching staff that finally says they have the roster that they want. It's a good time to be a Bears fan, and it's a great time to welcome Adam Hoge, WGN Radio Bears beat reporter, to the download. Adam, great to talk to you. How's Bourbonnais?
Oh, it's the same as it always is. It doesn't really change.
Also, tonight we got Adam for the hour tonight, so if you have any thoughts, questions, or comments about the 2017 Chicago Bears, the lines are open, 312-981-7200. You can call or text, and we will respond. All right, Adam, let's talk about this. I kind of just mentioned right there the nostalgia of Bears camp. Do you feel it? Do you feel something in the air on the first day of Bears training camp?
Yeah, I like training camp from the standpoint that I think it is important to start every season with some kind of event that brings the whole team together. You know, not every NFL team does this anymore. Some teams have training camp at their own facilities where they're at year-round, and some of those do try to set up a training camp atmosphere by making the players stay in hotel rooms and, you know, report every day. Others, though, just say, oh, you know, you could stay at home and come and just like it's a regular work day during the season. But I still think there's some value to going off somewhere. And actually, the Bears aren't even the extreme. Teams like the Cowboys go to California for their training camp and then come back to the Dallas area and get ready for the season. And I do think that there's, you know, staying in a dorm room obviously isn't ideal, especially when you're talking about big football players don't always fit in these rooms very well. But, you know, it's all about work. You come down here to Bourbonnais, and these guys don't have a whole lot of free time. They're expected to wake up early, get in the recovery room, lift weights, whatever it is, go to meetings, go to practice. After practice, there's more meetings, and they're required to work. And this is really, you know, a three-week boot camp for them. And it's not just football. You know, I think there's a lot of value to training camp, too, in Arizona for baseball and things like that. But this is very hardcore being on a campus setting like the Bears are.
You know, it's interesting you say that some teams have done away with it. It does feel kind of antiquated, the idea of putting a team on a college campus and having them do the 2-3 week boot camp. But, I mean, how do the players react? I mean, do they see it as sort of a, ugh, roll your eyes, I can't believe I got to do this again? Or do they buy into the sort of mental idea of team and chemistry and getting to work?
Yeah, I think that for the most part, if they're just being completely honest about the idea of being away from their families, especially some of the older players, they don't necessarily love it. But I think that those veterans that have been in the league long enough, and in the NFL, your NFL life doesn't really last that long. You know, it's for most players, you're lucky to make it 3 years. So the ones that are to the point where they're veterans and they have families that they're leaving, they've been in the league long enough where they understand how it works. They understand what's beneficial to a team. And I think a lot of those guys would tell you that while they don't necessarily like it, they understand the benefits of it. And I think for the younger guys, it's especially rookies, it has a lot of benefits because you take all the distractions out. That's really the big key, is you're taking a lot of the distractions out. You're setting these players' mindsets for the rigors of the NFL season and kind of establishing early what's important: rest, recovery, hard practices, because once the pads go on Saturday, that's when the real evaluation starts. So it is very beneficial, and I think most players would at least admit that, even if they don't like training camp.
John Fox, now you got a better understanding of how he runs training camp just a couple years in now, and you've been around other coaches. Can you tell the difference the way that a certain coach will run a training camp?
Absolutely. I mean, so now I've been through this with three head coaches. You had Lovie Smith, and all three have been really different. Lovie Smith loved to practice at 3 p.m., okay, right at the hottest part of the day down here in Bourbonnais. If you've never been to Bourbonnais, and those listening to us right now who live down in the Kinky Key, Bourbonnais, Bradley area, they know this. I keep turning on the news. I've been watching WGN TV today, and Skillings keep, you know, talking about how beautiful of a day it is in Chicago, and we're getting winds from the north, so it's nice and comfortable, and the humidity's all gone. Yeah, well, it's all here in Bourbonnais. I mean, when it's nice in Chicago, it is still baking here in Bourbonnais. I don't necessarily know the science behind it. Maybe Tom Skilling can tell us sometime, but it just sort of sits in this valley, and it is always hot. It's very rarely comfortable down here. And Lovie Smith used to love having practice at 3 p.m. when it was at its worst to get these guys ready for the season. Now, you go to Mark Trestman, who followed Lovie Smith. Trestman loved it. Was I'm starting to forget. It was either 8 or 9. It was at least 9 a.m. practices. There may have even been some at 8. So get up early in the morning before the humidity gets here. And take it easy. And he even went to the extreme of he hated guys being on the ground. No one on the ground, try to avoid injuries. And then what did we see? What was the theme of the Mark Trestman era that Ed Obradovich and Dan Hampton would just pound the table saying, these guys are so soft on defense, specifically on defense. They're so soft. They're not ready. And it was a mentality I think was actually accurate by the time you got to year two, that they just were not tough enough. And that was part of, I think, the struggles that John Fox and Ryan Pace had when they tried to flip this roster over, that they did try to establish a mentality and a new culture quickly. And Fox did run camp tougher than Mark Trestman, but that was a really low bar. And now they're starting, what we're seeing this year is a new schedule from John Fox that has built-in recovery days. So the Bears are not going to have a three-day stretch down here where they're full padded up and going as hard as possible. It's only going to be 2 days at a time, and then there might be a non-padded practice, or what we're seeing already tomorrow. The first padded practice is Saturday. To make sure everybody's ready for Saturday, tomorrow is going to be one of these recovery days, even though they've only had one practice so far. It's a lighter day. It's going to be mostly meetings and a walkthrough to make sure everybody's healthy and ready to go Saturday. And they really think that that this is going to help them, because they're still going to go hard on those hard days. So they're still going to try to toughen these guys up for the season.
Right.
But they want these guys to be recovered, because they think that last year in training camp, really the last 2 years, part of the reasons why these injuries started to pile up was because they weren't getting enough rest.
Well, that's interesting. And obviously the Bears have had injury problems in the last couple of years. We'll see if that helps. Adam Hoge, WGN Radio Sports, the Bears beat reporter for the station. Here's what we'll do. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about what we can expect from this squad. Adam Hoge on the Download 720 WGN. Stay with us. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're talking Bears camp. Adam Hoge on the line from Bourbonnais, 312-981-7200. If you'd like to jump in on the convo, we talked a little bit about camp and what it means. So let's talk about the Bears squad. You know, it's not about, you know, who was added. It's also about who's not there this year. And why don't we start with that? Jay Cutler. This will be the first Bears team without Jay Cutler in a long while. It's hard to even fathom.
Yeah, it is. And it's a little weird to get used to. You know, if there's one thing today that really stood out as you're watching the same practice fields and the same routine that you're kind of used to coming down here, no number six. And I even commented to somebody in the middle of practice, you know, past years there was no quarterback competition. I mean, you weren't really analyzing every single throw that Jay Cutler was making. I mean, I do remember a couple years ago there was like he didn't throw a turnover for nine days. Or something like that that we kept tracking, but like that was really because he was just throwing the ball really well and it was of note. You know, today I really found myself looking at Glennon, looking at Mitch Trubisky, and comparing these guys, even Mark Sanchez, because he's technically still the number two right now. And it's kind of fun. I love, and I think, Justin, you know this from the NFL draft, I love breaking down quarterbacks. And so it's really fun to be able to do that. I mean, Glennon is the unquestioned starter here. The Bears have been very clear about that. But we also know that long-term, it's Mitch Trubisky's team. So it's really fun, even just on this first day, to be looking at them and comparing their games, because they are different.
Do you see glimpses of why the Chicago Bears would have moved up in the draft and
for a guy like Mitch Trubisky and a couple of the plays that have been talked about today, the bomb down the sideline, the rolling out play that I've read three different ways.
Yeah.
Do you see glimpses of why he was picked so high?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and look, the first one down the sideline today, I'll preface it like I always do. They're not in pads today, and you can't hit the quarterback even when they are wearing pads. So it really, the games are going to be what matter. But the first pass down the sideline today, you're dealing with Mitch Trubisky's on the third team right now, so he's throwing to Tanner Gentry, who's an undrafted wide receiver out of Wyoming. Those are the kinds of players that he's working with right now, since he's not one of the starters or even on the second team, which the Bears have made very clear. But Gentry actually is a rookie who I think has some upside and could potentially make this practice squad, so he's someone to remember. And Sherrick McManus, who most Bears fans know, he's actually the longest tenured Bear now, if you can believe that. Sherrick McManus is. I know. That shows you the roster turnover. So they were one-on-one down the right sideline, and Mitch Trubisky threw a perfect pass because McManus was actually in good coverage, and he just put it right over the top, dropped it in there. Gentry made a nice catch. It was a nice throw, nice catch, and you're going, okay, that's a good throw. The one I loved that you just hinted at, Justin, was a throw that not every quarterback can make. And be careful, I'm not calling Mitch Trubisky Aaron Rodgers or anything, but it was an Aaron Rodgers-like throw on the run. We've seen this so many times where Aaron Rodgers will just sort of flick his wrist, so he's just running away from pressure. You think there's no way he can get a pass off, and he just sort of flips his wrist. It doesn't even look like a full throwing motion, and the ball somehow travels 20 yards downfield. And in this case for Trubisky, that was pretty much the throw, and it was accurate to Daniel Braverman. So that was the one wow moment today, and I think I tweeted that at the time where I think I actually said, whoa, because that it was really the first time with Mitch Trubisky now that I've said, that's an NFL throw. That's why the Bears drafted him number two overall.
You know, I mentioned that, you know, we talked Jay Cutler's not there. Alshon Jeffrey's not there as well. A lot of pressure on Kevin White. Couple drop balls today. But Kevin White is the heir apparent, although I'm not sure he's earned it since he's been hurt the last 2 years.
Right.
But he's the number one for this Bears team.
You know, and I sort of wonder, the Bears would not admit this, you know, openly, but I sort of wonder if they're expecting Cam Meredith to actually emerge as the number one this year.
Really?
Now that would obviously be disappointing, considered that you drafted Kevin White number seven overall, and Cam Meredith was an undrafted free agent that came in the same year. But, you know, however you get him, it doesn't really matter. If Kevin White turns out to be a bust and Cam Meredith ends up being a great number one,
who cares, right?
Well, look, yeah, it doesn't look great that you drafted Kevin White number seven overall, but you did also, you get credit for turning an undrafted guy into a stud. We'll see how it plays out this year. I think Meredith is poised for kind of a breakout year, as much as last year sort of was one for him. I think this year will be even more of one. And then with Kevin, I'm not giving up on him by any means. I just, what worries me is, you heard Ryan Pace bring up the word confidence yesterday in his opening press conference down here in Bourbonnais. Now, I'm not going to knock Kevin White if confidence is still an issue. He's broken the same leg twice. I don't know how confident you could be if every time you go on the field, your leg is breaking, right?
Yeah.
That's tough. But, you know, last year when Kevin White got off to a little bit of a slow start, it was clear that he wasn't necessarily – it looked like he was thinking too much. Right?
He looked like a rookie. I mean, second-year guy.
It was understandable because it was the first time he actually was playing in NFL games. And then all of a sudden in week three in Dallas, he had a play, I think it was down the left sideline, where he caught the ball, he lowered his shoulder, he ran over a defender, and he got tackled right there, but he got up with some fire. I mean, he got up, and I think he signaled first down, and you could just tell, okay, he's playing with emotion, and that's the guy they sold us on, and that's the guy you saw at West Virginia. You saw a very physical wide receiver, not in the Alshon Jeffrey go up and get it mode, but in the I'm going to catch the ball and run with it and run guys over mode, and he had that. And we haven't really seen that here in Chicago because it seemed to click in week three. He carried that into week four against the Lions last year, and then he got hurt in that game. And then we didn't see him the rest of the year. So I think confidence is still an issue. I think he's still thinking too much. If he could get all that figured out, the ability, I think, is still there, and there's still hope for Kevin White.
You know, I mean, the addition would be Marcus Wheaton as well. He dropped a ball in, you know, today as well. But, I mean, do you see – I mean, Marcus Wheaton was a Pittsburgh Steeler. He had some injury issues as well. Does he play any factor in being an offensive weapon for this team?
I think so. I mean, the way – look, they brought in a lot of guys like Victor Cruz, who, if he still has ability, we know he can play. He's a household name in the NFL at this point. They brought in Kendall Wright, who's a former first-round pick who's kind of not lived up to expectations. Reuben Randall is a name NFL fans probably know. These are all the guys that are here. But Marcus Wheaton's the one who got paid guaranteed money at a decent rate. So you can always kind of go back to the contracts with free agents and understand, okay, they gave this guy a lot of money. They didn't even give Victor Cruz a lot of money. So they have high expectations for Marcus Wheaton. I think he has the inside track at winning the slot receiver job. And actually, he had a nice catch from Mike Glennon. Try to be fair to both of these quarterbacks. Mike Glennon also had a nice throw today for a deep touchdown that Marcus Wheaton brought in. But then on the very next snap was when Marcus Wheaton dropped the ball. So, I mean, we can't pick apart every single rep at this point. But I, to answer your question, I do think the plan is for Marcus Wheaton to be the number three wide receiver. I mean, it's very possible week one against the Falcons, it's Kevin White, Cam Meredith, and Marcus Wheaton who get the start.
Adam Hogue joining me tonight. Okay, we're going to talk. We're going to take a break and an update with Rob Martier in the news. And then we come back. I want to talk about identity because obviously this team's identity is on the defensive side of the ball. It always has been in Chicago, but we haven't talked about the defense. A lot of retooling in the offseason, especially in the secondary. But we'll talk about what are the strengths and what's the identity of the Chicago Bears team. Adam Hogue, WGN Radio Sports, joining us from Bourbon A. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. We're talking Bears football here tonight. The Big Table, Adam Hogue, WGN Radio, Bears beat reporter live in Bourbon A as he covers the training camp for the Chicago Bears, which got underway today. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you've got some questions, comments, thoughts about the campaign kicking off for this year's Chicago Bears. Adam, I want to start. I'm going to start with Nicholas. I'm going to bring him in just a second because as we shift the conversation to the defensive side of the ball, there's a lot of questions I have about what the identity is of the squad, and a lot of it seems to always center around who isn't on the field. Nicholas, what's your question, bud?
Hi, Adam. Got a quick question about Pernell McPhee being on the PUP list. Obviously, that was like a surprise call that came out of nowhere with Ryan Pace being optimistic no one's going to actually be on the PUP list, but Pernell McPhee came out of nowhere being on it. What do you think that makes the team and how that moving forward?
Thanks a lot, Nicholas. Adam, that's the big story. I mean, the big story on the defensive side of the ball is who's not at practice.
Yeah, it seems to always be the big storyline, and you just hope that these guys don't pile up because that's kind of what happened last year with this defense, which actually did improve statistically, especially when it came to yardage, not necessarily keeping teams out of the end zone, which is ultimately what matters, but there were signs that, okay, starting to come together here, and then by the end of the year, there was just too many guys hurt, and it really fell apart, which is why I think you saw that blowout in Minnesota when it was later in the year. But look, with Pernell, this unfortunately seems to be an ongoing issue. You talk to his teammates, they all say, look, this guy makes a difference on the field. Even if he's not 100%, he's just got that attitude that you love. He's always going to go after it. But at some point, you have to wonder just the physical toll. Can he still do it? And here's the deal with what happened. This latest thing is the Bears – you know, I think Ryan Pace actually was genuine. The physicals were literally going on while Ryan Pace and John Fox talked to us yesterday. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess if Pernell's physical was early, maybe they did know about this or at least knew it was going on. If it was later, maybe it didn't pop up till then. But the thing was, is this Pernell was healthy. He had lost weight, at least 10 pounds since the end of the season, 25 pounds since the end of the 2015 season. He thought that was going to be better on his knees, and all the attention had been on one of his knees, and he was healthy. He was in all the OTAs.
Yeah,
he
was some of the offseason looking good, right?
And they go away for 6 weeks, and sometimes guys get hurt. And he showed up yesterday and told the training staff, hey, look, it's my other knee. I got something's going on. John Fox called it an irregularity. And his physical confirmed the issue. So it's hard to guess on how long he's going to be out. Last year he missed the first 6 games of the season. I get a sense that was maybe more significant. Early sense here is maybe he'll be able to return during training camp, but we really don't know. And really, to get back to Nicholas's question, long term, I don't know how much you can depend on Pernell McPhee.
That's hard to hear.
There's just too many issues here. The good news is Willie Young still looks, even at his age, pretty decent. You're getting Lamar Houston, actually better than pretty decent. Willie Young's a starter. You know, Willie Young's a good player. Lamar Houston, I thought, looked good last year before he got hurt. He's been working hard all offseason, so there's depth there. But most importantly, Leonard Floyd, yeah, I think, is set for a breakout year. And if Leonard Floyd has a Pro Bowl-type season, and he was on pace for double-digit sacks last year, then that'll make it much easier if Pernell McPhee is – and look, he's already limited. He's really only – my guess is even if Pernell is, quote-unquote, healthy enough to play, he's really not going to be out on the field for more than 50% of the plays.
You know, Adam, I guess I'd ask the question, is this where the coaching staff and the media and even the more articulate fans, is this the strength of the team? Is the strength of the team the front seven on the defensive side of the ball?
Well, you know what's interesting, and another reason why I don't think Ryan Pace knew about this Pernell thing at the point he talked to us yesterday was because when he brought up the strength of the team, he brought up the outside linebackers, and he said the health of those outside linebackers is so crucial. But he was feeling good about it, right?
Right.
And then I don't know he would have said that if he knew Pernell was – I guess it doesn't really matter whether or not he knew it at that point. But it does get back to what Ryan Pace, the general manager, believes, is this is the strength of the team. It's certainly the strength of the defense. And making sure that these veterans like Pernell and Willie Young and Lamar Houston and Sam Acho and even guys you probably don't know Dan Scuda yet, but Dan Scuda was a guy they brought in the offseason who was played under Vic Fangio in the past, and he's probably really just a depth guy, but he's had some sacks in the past too and has had his most success under Vic Fangio. But these are all veterans. This is an older group, so you got to be more concerned about their health. But then you have the young guy in Leonard Floyd, and really, you know, his health is crucial. 2 concussions last year, and if these guys stay healthy, I do think this is the strength.
Well, it's obviously we're talking about depth. Depth's a big issue. We saw last year where it just kind of fell apart, and I think as more of this, I mean, I want to bring Darren in as well because he's got a question about other teams as they start to pare down their rosters and cuts in training camp. Where could the Bears look for more depth? What's your question, Darren?
Hi, Adam. Hey, I got a question to ask you, and this is from the 2014 first-round pick of the Philadelphia Eagles. They drafted Marcus Smith. He's an outside linebacker in a 3-4, and they went to a 4-3. Would he be a good addition to Leonard Floyd? Because this guy's only 25 years old. I was just wondering, and I looked up some of his stats. He's like 6'3", 260. I think he'd be a really good addition to this 3-4 outside linebacker because Pernell McPhee, you're right, he ain't going to make it 40, 50 plays a game.
Yeah.
But I mean, for the season. I'm going to hang up and let you talk.
Thanks, Darren. Adam. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate the phone call, Darren. And look, I understand why fans would think, that, okay, here's a former first rounder that just got cut. And maybe there's an opportunity there to get something out of him. And I don't completely disagree with that. I mean, if you got 90 guys on your roster, if you're going to take a flyer on a former first-round pick who's still only 25 and see if maybe
why not,
Vic
right.
Fangio can get something out of him, then now's the time to do it. So Marcus Smith is a third-year player out of Louisville who was drafted in the first round by the Eagles. And this draft pick, though, Justin, was just crushed from the moment they picked Marcus Smith. No one thought he would be a first rounder. They mostly projections were second and third rounders. So everyone thought that the Eagles had reached for Marcus Smith, and sure enough, he was not able to. He's actually in his fourth year now, but in his first 3 years, he was only able to put together 4 sacks total. 2.5 last year. He has 0 starts in 3 years. For a former first-round pick, yeah. It's just not really there with Marcus Smith, you know, so I wouldn't get your hopes up too high.
I guess, Adam, I wonder, and I echo Darren's sentiment, when you're talking about looking for playmakers. And, you know, the Bears' defense over the years, and I go back to Lance Briggs and Brian Urlacher, of course, and Charles Tillman and the Tommy Harris's, where it seemed like the Bears' defensive squad was one that was just salivating at the mouth to make a play.
Yeah.
And that has been – was always a hallmark of a Lovie Smith defense. And what we saw with the Trestman days and what they were doing with was Mel Tucker, who was the defensive coordinator. And then also even with Vic Fangio, they've fallen off in that regard. It seems a little bit more bend, not break. They don't seem to be making big plays that rile up the fans or change the course of a game. At some point, you have to start thinking about, is that something that isn't on a stat sheet? Is that something that, you know, we have to be better players that come in with an instinct for that kind of play?
Well, certainly it's valuable, especially on defense. You got to have guys who are hungry and willing to. I think what the average football fan kind of forgets is like how tough every single snap is. Like it hurts to get popped in the mouth, you know, when you're rushing the quarterback. And those offensive linemen are bigger than you, and he puts a stiff arm. I mean, you want to take a Kyle Long stiff arm right to your face mask? I mean, even though you're wearing a helmet, it doesn't feel good. And the NFL can kind of weed out those with hands-to-the-face penalties and all that kind of stuff as much as they want, but most of it gets missed on every single snap. So it is certainly a mentality that you have to take into every single snap to get through every play and then go right back to the huddle and say, yeah, I want to do that again. I mean, who wants to do – I don't want to do that. So, yeah, absolutely, there's a mentality here. A lot, sure, you get drafted on athletic ability and how high you can jump and how fast you can run and how strong you are, but you talk to talent evaluators, and the biggest question mark and the reason why there's so many Marcus Smiths out there that just don't make it is because the hardest thing to judge when they're drafting players and even signing players – is what's inside you. It doesn't come out on a stat sheet. You can't really measure it. You have to watch the tape to really understand that. And to project it from college to the NFL level is not easy. Yeah. So I think the Bears have added some guys that do have that. I think Akeem Hicks showed that last year. I think once Leonard Floyd gets more comfortable and confident in the NFL, you're going to see that kind of mentality. Jarrell Freeman, I think, has that mentality. I think Danny Trevathan has that mentality. Certainly Pernell McPhee has that mentality. But we're talking about guys here, and I would say Eddie Goldman too. Every single one of those players I just named, only Akeem Hicks was the one who avoided injury last year.
Yeah, they have to prove they can stay on the field.
They got to stay on the field. And then meanwhile, none of those guys I mentioned are in the secondary, which is another huge problem.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a break and let's talk about the secondary. We'll wrap up there. Adam Hogue, WGN Radio, Bears beat reporter, joining me tonight. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Stay with us. It's Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Joining me from Bourbon A, Adam Hogue, Bears beat reporter for WGN Radio Sports, covering training camp, the first day for the Chicago Bears 2017-2018 campaign. Hopefully it goes all the way to February. We'll see about that. I'll try my best to be optimistic. Let's talk about the secondary as we wrap up tonight. I got to say, I mean, this is the one area of the team that has been completely overhauled and an area that Chicago Bears fans hopefully will see improvement.
Well, this is the area where they have a bunch of guys who were starting games last year who are now just fighting for roster spots, okay? So I'm talking about guys like Harold Jones-Quarte, Deion Bush, Bryce Callahan, Cravon LeBlanc, okay? These are guys who really were thrown in, Adrian Amos too, thrown into spots starting NFL games where maybe they weren't necessarily completely qualified for. So to help this situation, the Bears go out, they sign Prince Amukamara, veteran corner. They go out and sign Marcus Cooper, who is just getting in the veteran territory, younger type of guy, but somebody who they believe is on the upswing and somebody that can go intercept the football. Same thing with Quinton Demps in terms of interceptions. Quinton Demps had 6 interceptions last year. Do you know how many the Bears had as a team?
Close, I'll bet.
8.
Ugh.
So Quinton Demps almost had as many interceptions as the entire Bears defense did last year. Now, he's in his 30s, so he's much older. But what it did is, so 4 of your starting secondary spots, 3 of the 4 have been filled by veterans, pushing a bunch of these other guys who really weren't qualified to just backup roles. Or in the case of like Cravon LeBlanc and Bryce Callahan, they're competing for the nickelback role, which they're probably fine at as long as they're there and not having to be on the outside covering Odell Beckham,
which is where they were all last year, right?
Right, right. Right. So it's a big difference. And then a bunch of these safeties, these younger guys, are all competing for one spot, including Eddie Jackson, the draft pick out of Alabama. And then the big question, Justin, is what happens with Kyle Fuller,
yes,
your former first-round pick, who's the only name I haven't mentioned so far? And that's a big question here. The fact he's still here tells me 2 things. One, they tried to trade him in the offseason, and they couldn't, so there wasn't much of a market for him. But 2, that after that happens, you usually just cut a guy. That's what happened with Matt Slauson last year. They tried to trade him. They couldn't. They cut him. Okay, so Kyle Fuller's still here. That tells you that they still think there's some ability there, that if he can get healthy, and he missed the whole last year with a minor knee injury that apparently cost him the whole year, they think there's still some ability there from Kyle Fuller. But here's the problem. I don't think he's going to beat out Prince Amukamara or Marcus Cooper if they're healthy. So he needs some injury help, I think, because Kyle Fuller not really going to give you much on special teams. Mm. And it's tough to keep a backup who can't play special teams at all.
Well, we'll pay attention to the proposed possible cut list of veterans and others that may not make it through camp as we continue to talk with you throughout the camp. You know, as we wrap up here, the big storyline, I'm fascinated to hear Coach Fox and Ryan Pace to an extent say this is the roster that they wanted, that they were able to turn over a lot of the roster from the former regime, and this up and down is closer to what they want than they've ever had before. You'll hear and you watch the national programs, sports stuff, they say John Fox, Ryan Pace, both on the hot seat. What, yeah. I mean, and as you look at this and you make these declarations that this is the roster that you want and this team stumbles out of the gate, where are we at as a Chicago Bears franchise? Is it the kind of thing where we might see management pull the plug on John Fox early in the season if it doesn't go well, and find ourselves in yet another rebuild at the end of the season?
Well, look, I think the Bears, whether or not John Fox believes that they can make the playoffs, I think he has instilled in the players that they believe that they're really underrated, that they're much healthier, that they brought in veterans to add to the depth, and if they can stay healthy, they have a team that is capable of making the playoffs. I mean, then everybody on the outside, you start talking about like national media. I don't think this team is getting any respect whatsoever. I think, you know, I've been reading some preseason magazines that basically say, look, the Bears are going to finish dead last in the division. They're going to be picking top 5 again in the draft. I think it's somewhere in the middle of that. I think the Bears are going to be a bit better. And what I've been saying is I would be less surprised if they make the playoffs than if they completely bomb out. So I think there's a greater chance they make the playoffs than they go 3-13 again. But I think it's somewhere in the middle there. And so the question about what happens with John Fox then is, very few times do coaches in the NFL enter the final year of their contract as sort of a lame duck situation. And so does John Fox win enough games where, you know, who knows what happens in New Orleans? If the Saints are bad, they could make a change and Sean Payton could be suddenly available. Ryan Pace worked with Sean Payton.
Yeah, right. Chicago guy, Naperville, right?
in New Orleans, and there's a connection there. So that's the kind of, you know, a story just came out right before I came on with you tonight, Justin, that John Gruden wants to get back into coaching. You know, so there's a lot of factors that are going to go into this. I think it's going to come down to wins and losses. It might come down to Ryan Pace's relationship with John Fox, which I don't think is as strained as some people have made it out to be. But, look, I don't think the Bears are going to be bad enough that everyone's going to be saying, yep, John Fox absolutely has to be fired.
Right.
But I also don't know that everyone's going to be like, yeah, let's give him three more years. So it's going to be a tough situation at the end of the season.
I love it that we are on our first conversation of the year, day one, and we're like, who else is out there?
No, it's not good.
Adam Hogue, WGN Radio Sports, Bears beat reporter. You can find all his stuff, his great work, on WGNRadio.com/Bears. Adam Hogue, thanks so much for joining us tonight. We appreciate it, and we look forward to continuing the conversation at Bears camp throughout the camp.
Absolutely. This was a blast, Justin.